Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Flynn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome back to a Need to Know podcast, special event, special day, and special co-host, Brenton Johnson. Welcome back.
Good to be back, Robert. How are you going?
Pretty OD'd on the Kool-Aid after Microsoft Ignite, still trying to work through the 1,610 odd sessions that are now available for on-demand viewing. Managed to download most of the PowerPoints, but I can see a full year's worth of work ahead of me to get through all of those. So what we've decided to do is give you a bit of an update on all the amazing stuff, or the most important or the most interesting amazing stuff that's come from Ignite. We may need to spread this out over one or two or maybe even three podcasts, given the amount of information that's come out. So yes, I've been very busy. What about yourself, Brenton?
Yeah, look, a typical day-to-day MSP stuff. We had a Sophos event the other day talking about cybersecurity, which is really cool. So I connected with a cybersecurity guy there. He runs a podcast over at Sophos, so we might have him as a guest on the show. I also ran into another person who does quite a bit with Microsoft Technologies. They've rolled out Teams, they're doing software-defined networking and Azure and all this crazy stuff that way over my head. So I said, oh, maybe we can get you on and get you talking about some of the crazy stuff you can do in Azure and what the opportunity is for the customer. Because when I was talking to him, he was really quite frustrated that Microsoft's out doing these amazing things that no one knows about. It's like the world's best secret. So the people like Robert who knows about it, but for the everyday Joe out there, customer, they barely know anything about IT beyond, you know, their immediate
bubble. I think I'd second that, certainly. Microsoft is doing some amazing stuff. I think a lot of it, unfortunately, I hate to point the finger, but I'm going to, is on the IT pro, who typically isn't up to speed with a lot of this sort of stuff. You know, things like conditional access, all of this privileged identity management, all of this stuff is super cool, really secure, makes things much better for the customer and also management-wise, but you just don't see it implemented, like setting up a default environment in Office 365, not many people take many steps to harden it, you know, turning off POP and IMAP and all that sort of stuff. It's very disheartening that even the basics aren't being done. So yes, I would agree with that individual 100% that there is a huge amount of stuff here that should be implemented, is now available to be implemented, but basically isn't. And unfortunately, I think, you know, it doesn't get implemented largely because the IT person charged with that probably isn't aware of it or is afraid to do it or doesn't have experience in it. So we'd certainly encourage the people that do IT out there to step up and make sure that they have a look at all these fantastic things that are coming and look at come out with a program to implement them inside the business.
Yeah, well, it reminds me very much of I went to an event with Pitcher Partners, which was a fintech event. They got one of the top gurus in fintech to come and speak. The tickets were about $700 a ticket or something, and they had some business leaders there. They had a few people from Pitcher Partners there, and I said, oh, why are you running this event? Why are you putting all this effort and energy into running these events and bringing in these top speakers? And they said, well, we went out and did a whole bunch of research, and what we found is the reason now these customers aren't moving to newer technologies is because their advisors aren't moving to newer technologies. So when we're talking about how do we get technology adoption, how do we get the benefits of that, it was really more about trying to get Pitcher Partners to get on the real cutting edge of technology, not so much about trying to get their customers on board, because their research showed that their customers wouldn't move on it until they felt like their advisors had moved on it. So I think that's a really really good segue into what we're talking about today, because there's been a lot of updates from Microsoft this week, hasn't there, Robert?
Yes, and I think probably the primary one that we should let everybody know about, that everybody's been holding their collective breath about, I believe, is the Microsoft Ignite. The tour is coming to Sydney. So we hadn't heard anything about a partner event, but yes, indeed, there will be a Microsoft Ignite the Tour in Sydney. This will be in February 13 to 14, 2019 at the International Convention Centre in Sydney. We can't sign up as just yet. We can register for free so that we get a reminder on October the 17th to go and sign up. So this is a two-day technical event, which is obviously bringing some of the Ignite content around the world. Sydney is on the roadshow list there. So if you are a local, unfortunately, it's the only event in Australia, is the one in Sydney. So make a date to come and visit us in Sydney, and we'll certainly put something together. I think that Brenton will have a whole range of stickers from the podcast and t-shirts and hats that he'll be giving out for free for people who come up and mention the podcast, won't you, Brenton?
Oh, of course. If you can find me up there, I'd have to have a look at my calendar in February and see if I can make it up there.
Does anybody else hear the sound of a backing up vehicle here? Is that you backing up really quickly there, getting out of responsibility of marketing the podcast of which you're supposed to be a co-host of?
Well, yeah, that is me doing that. What I really should have said is Robert's going to get all that stuff organized and I'll just be walking around handing it out. So if I don't have it, it will be because Robert hasn't provided me with the hats and sunglasses and stickers that I require to fulfill his promises.
There you go. See, that's the way it works. You know, it might be time to go and suss out a new co-host. So, yeah, if you want to do an interview for a new co-host between February 13th and 14 in Sydney at the Ignite session, come and find me. I'm more than welcome. All right. So,
free hat.
Yeah, exactly. You get a free hat for trying. So with that over, for let people know that the Ignite tour is on the roadshow. Expect to have that in Sydney in February. I will kick things off with what I think is probably the best or the largest or the most interesting piece of news from Ignite was the Windows Virtual Desktop. So this is basically going to give you the ability to run Windows 7, 8 or Windows 10 desktop. That is being made available to Microsoft 365 Enterprise customers. And basically you'll provision this inside your own Azure account, but it will effectively allow you to run a VDI, Virtual Desktop Environment, and it'll be optimized for things like Office, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and it is the only version of Windows 10 that will support multi-user access. So the sign-up is available. The service will go live, I believe, in 2019 and will be tied to an offer with Microsoft 365 Enterprise, but they have also committed to make this available for Microsoft 365 Business. I would assume that it will probably be an add-on for everybody else, but it will include it in the plan. So still working through some of the details and what's involved in that, but basically, as I've said for a long time, is Microsoft is extending the offering, the cloud offering, by now giving you effectively a cloud desktop hosted in Azure. There'll be a nice clean environment that you can connect up to and use basically on any device. So for me, that was probably the number one most interesting and anticipated announcement of Ignite. What about yourself, Brenton?
Yeah, what sort of use case do you see for this, Robert? What is it that's so exciting?
Ooh, so many uses, right? So especially in SMB, right? What's the problem with most users' desktops that you come across, right? They're all kept in orderly, arranged fashion. They've never got any software they're not supposed to have on them. They're always kept up to date. No, that's definitely not the case, right? So it's going to be very nice from an IT professional's point of view and from a user's point of view to be able to RDP or remote in to a fully managed cloud desktop that is clean, is up to date, can be accessed on any device, your phone, your iPad, your desktop, and basically be kept in a state like a company machine. So again, people went to the office, they had group policy, they had all that sort of stuff running on clean machines, which they weren't supposed to install third party or unauthorized software. The VDI environment's going to give you that. So I see this as a very, very enticing offer for the simple reason is it's going to get over machines that are probably full of crudware that don't install, have all these funny issues with it. Now, the other thing is Microsoft has also said that if you run a Windows 7 desktop in this VDI environment, they will continue to give you the patches and the updates and support that system in the VDI environment for free. So again, if you've got a Windows 7 application that you just don't want to get rid of, if you can virtualize it, then you're going to get a much better experience, I think, than trying to run it on some desktop. So I see a huge demand for this and can't wait for it to come down in the SMB plants.
Yeah, I'm certainly thinking of customers like accounting firms, for example, who run 50 different versions of accounting software, and some of them won't run on Windows 10, so they have a Windows 7 machine kicking around. You're sitting there trying to secure a network, and you have these one or two Windows 7 machines kicking around on your AD you're trying to get rid of. Put them up in the cloud, have a bit more of a conversation about standardization. As Robert says, standardization is just another word for profit. Isn't that right, Robert?
Exactly right. And I think also, too, the other thing here is, I mean, I run various virtual machines. One's a PowerShell machine, one's a demo machine, one's a test machine. I use it all the time. One's a SharePoint machine, virtualized server, Hyper-V server. It is so convenient to be able to run these and back them up to the cloud, to provision them, to upgrade them, to add additional disks. This is so easy to do thanks to software-defined networking, which we can't do on-prem. Now, giving that flexibility to businesses, even the smallest businesses, I think is going to be a huge incentive for people to move this way. It's just going to make it so much easier. So you could come in with any device which has any amount of crap on it. As long as you can get to the internet and run an RDP session, you'll be able to get to this nice, clean, totally managed virtual desktop, which again will probably restrict the chance of getting malware and all that sort of stuff on it, which users get on their desktops as they move around the environment. So yeah, I see this as a really, really huge opportunity for people to go and look at standardization, integrate and add on to what customers have and remove a lot of the pain that we tend to see on-prem when customers, you know, accumulate all this junky software over time.
Yeah, well, I think you get other advantages too, like the hardware independent stuff. So when everyone remembers Spectre and Meltdown, all of a sudden everyone's got to go out manually to all machines and do a BIOS upgrade, which is a scary thing to do on one machine, let alone your whole fleet. Now, if you're virtualizing all of that in the cloud and you're getting in with 2FA and all of this sort of thing, it's a completely different equation, I think, from a security standpoint. Like, you'd maybe be in less of a hurry to rush out there and go out and do all of those things. You probably still have to do them, but you know, you're saying, okay, well, that's in the cloud. Here's another computer. We're going to work on this one. Here's another one, remote in there. Do your work, and then when we're done with these ones, we'll bring them back and we'll swap the other ones over. And you know, you can have a really seamless experience rather than, you know, oh, this is my computer, you can't touch it, we're not letting you near it, I need this for my work. Your computer's now on the cloud, so no stress, we've got you covered.
So I think part of it is it'll be, like I said, a digital twin, as is another term they use, is basically you'll be able to have your own workstation clean that's for work, and then do whatever you want on your desktop. You can use both. You can work from one or the other. If you find yourself in a place where you don't have your normal workstation, you can remote in and use the one in the cloud. So, yeah, I see lots and lots of benefits and power, and also the ability to standardize and run up. So imagine being able to provision these machines consistently, so there's always going to be consistent because they're always software. It's going to be, yeah, I think this is going to be a really big feature, and we'll have to see what it's like when it actually comes out, hopefully in the new year, and what they bring down to SMB. But I'm certainly hanging out to see that, and I've signed up already for the preview, so can't wait for that. Another one, the second big one I thought, which was for our friends in the Apple world, was Mac is now getting the Files on Demand. So Files on Demand is the synchronization technology from Microsoft to synchronize SharePoint, OneDrive, and OneDrive Consumer to a desktop. And rather than having the file, all the files being brought down immediately, you can choose effectively which ones to keep on your machine and keep in the cloud. So again, many people feel that the Macintosh is probably a bit of a second-class citizen. And I think to Microsoft's credit, it certainly is trying its best to make it as equivalent as it can. It's adding these features, obviously not as quickly as it does Windows, but the Mac stuff is generally not that far behind. So I think our Mac brethren will certainly love the upcoming Files on Demand for Mac. You can go in there and sign up for the preview and get it working in the preview. But again, Microsoft will continue to iterate and improve on it down the track.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point around Macs. You know, Macs are in a slower development cycle, but Apple have a very tight control over what code runs on a Mac. It's not like a Windows where you can just deploy stuff and who cares, run whatever you want. Apple have a very tight solution to that. So it's not like they can just release these updates, see what happens. Apple's going to always have that control over it. But yeah, we've got to also remember that Apple wouldn't exist without Microsoft coming in, funding it, and then promising to release Microsoft Office on it for a number of years until Steve Jobs could come in and actually save the company. So it's good that they're, even today, they're very supportive. They don't care if you run on Mac, if you run on Linux, if you run on Windows, as long as you use Microsoft Azure and Office 365, they're happy.
Yeah, so they've become more a software company. I mean, they do their own hardware now with things like Surface, and we can speak about that as well because a big announcement today about that. But they look at that as an example of what manufacturers should supply. So I think that's good. Microsoft's setting the trend with the high-end stuff like Surface, but we're still seeing that ecosystem of PCs. So number three on my list was Microsoft Learn. So lots and lots of stuff, obviously, in the cloud. There's lots and lots of products. Rolling that all together in a simple portal, Microsoft has now done that for us with their Learn portal. This will allow you to go in and sign up for courses, track courses, keep abreast of what's going on. Again, all free, all available directly from Microsoft. So we'll put all the links to this in the show notes. I think that's a really good one, especially for IT pros who want to keep up to date. Lots of material there, more coming. Again, it can still be a little bit confusing, but that's a great resource to certainly start with when it comes to Microsoft Cloud. Now,
Give you a bit of an idea on that too, you know, they've got a course on SVG, Mastering SVG, which is Scalable Vector Graphics. This is a 2-hour course that's released by Microsoft. Just don't think there's stuff on there that's not relevant to you. They have a lot of content on there, so you'll find something on there that will work for you, I think. It's probably not SVGs. That's probably not that interesting to you unless you're a graphic designer or a web designer or something like that. But there is a lot of stuff on there, so check it out.
And it'll continue to grow. So again, bookmark that and come back to that. Now, OneDrive, always impressed with the amount of updates and changes and improvements that OneDrive is bringing to us. So again, there's going to be an automated transcription service that will transcribe video and audio files. It will make them searchable. So you'll be able to go in and search for a word in a podcast, like what word can we use, Brenton? We'll search for the word Brenton, for example. And we can see how many times that occurs in our podcast. So again, that will be done natively shortly in OneDrive and in SharePoint. We're also going to see the ability to kick off workflows based on those audios and video transcripts. So it is possible down the track that if we upload this podcast, every time that we mention the keyword, that could kick off a Microsoft flow, that could send out an email, do a process or whatever. So some really powerful stuff there that is coming along in the OneDrive environment. And obviously we've got the ability now to sync files on demand with Mac. And the last one that I've got here on the OneDrive stuff is they are pleased to announce that they'll soon be able to sync files from multiple Office 365 tenants to PC and Mac. So for those of us that need to support many, many tenants and want to synchronize across many, many tenants, that ability is coming shortly from the old OneDrive product. So that's great.
Yeah, it is, Robert. It's amazing how quickly this stuff's been moving. It wasn't that long ago I was sitting there going, why is there 13 sync engines for OneDrive for Business, and why do we even have OneDrive for Business? And within a very short period of time, they've adopted the consumer sync engine. They're making everything work properly. They're doing file versioning like a pro. This cloud syncing thing. So, you know, I ran into a customer that had well over 250 gig of files. I'm like, your hard drive's only 250 gig. And yeah, so it turns out about half the files were sitting up in cloud storage, and he was only syncing down the other half that he needed. So all of this stuff has come so quickly and so fast, it's really hard to keep on top of these things.
Have you got anything else that grabs your attention before we I keep going with my list?
Yeah, look, I think 1809 is coming around. Everyone has to be ready for that. There's a few nice features in that. I found a nice blog post from Window Insiders around what their favorite parts of the new update were. So for those too lazy to go and look at the list, I'll quickly run through their list of the top, say, let's say top 10. One, block suspicious behaviors. Two, better notepad, so more compatible with Mac and Linux. Three, dark mode for File Explorer. Better copy and paste, seeing it's copy and paste across devices with 1809, which is really interesting.
Cloud copy and paste, my God. How long has that taken? That is a site. That's a lifesaver.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm excited about that or not, because people copy and paste passwords and things like that, and they have things in there they probably shouldn't.
Who cares about them? I just want it because it's going to make my life so much easier. So, yeah, big plus for me anyway. Keep going.
Well, yeah, I think every time I get I create a QR code on my computer to move data across onto my phone. But anyway, redesign Microsoft Edge menus and settings. So some really cool stuff, some security enhancements in Edge as well. Embedded handwriting option, improved update experience, which is number 7. Number 8 is more accurate typing. Number 9 is save time with search previews. And number 10 is one-click screenshots. So they're really ramping up that clipping tool, screen clipping tool, whatever it's called in Windows. It was released with Windows 7, I believe.
Snip.
That's Snip. Yep. You can search for that now. It's your improved Microsoft search. So, yeah, these are some of the things. There's another 5 things on the list there. One that I thought would get up more is maybe the emojis, 150 new emojis or new Skype, but yeah, or syncing photos from your phone to PC. Not as exciting, apparently, as the new dark theme in File Explorer.
Your phone stuff. The other thing, have you seen the registry? The new registry editor, unbelievable. The improvements there, that hasn't changed since 1995, and now they've updated that. It's like, woo, unbelievable. So, yeah, lots of things in 1809. I've just downloaded and put it on one of my machines. Worked really well, had no issues. Again, have a play with it. There's also, we're speaking about new stuff, is a new version of Office. I don't know if you've seen that being brought down from Office 365, where they've got the minimal menus, different look and feel, much cleaner. Watch out for that coming soon. So again, I've got that on my machine. Looks really good, really impressive. Really pleased with it. You can also, again, make it much less clutter when you're doing your day-to-day work here. So back to me. Number 5 I've got on my list is Microsoft does giveth a lot, but it does take away. So one of the things it's taking away is Staff Hub. So Staff Hub was a basic rostering style timesheeting program for Office 365. And any guess where Staff Hub is going, Brenton? Where do you think that's going?
Well, I remember when they launched it, they had the Accor hotels and 111,000 people using it. So I don't know if they've migrated to a new solution or not, but I'm going to say it's going away.
No, not right. What's the one product in Office 365 that's basically sucking everything into the vortex and taking over the world?
What? product. Are we talking about Dynamics? Are they moving it into Dynamics?
No, no, no. You fail. You fail. You fail. The team, the product that's doing it is Teams. So all the stuff in Staff Hub is going to be sucked into Teams. So the ability to do rostering, to do that sort of stuff is going to become part of Teams. So Staff Hub as a standalone product, yes, is going away, but that functionality will be rolled into Teams. First line workers especially will be able to look at rosters and do the sort of things they've been doing in Staff Hub. Makes a lot of sense to me, reduces the amount of products, confusion and whatnot. So bye-bye Staff Hub, hello new features in Teams. Another new feature that we've got or product is we're getting a mobile app for Microsoft Stream. Woohoo! So Microsoft Stream is the video corporate YouTube style solution for Office 365. So you do a meeting in Teams, you can upload it automatically into Stream, replay it, view it, transcribe the audio, do the searching. But why do you think we need a mobile app, young Britton? Here's your second question. Can you answer this one right? Why do we need a mobile app for Stream? Why can't we just watch it on the web?
Oh, well, with progressive web apps, we won't need a mobile app.
But why do we Why do we need a mobile app for Stream? Come on.
Is it a trick question?
No, there's no...
It seems like a kind of an obvious thing.
You're accusing me of giving you trick questions? That's most insulting. The reason that we need a mobile app is because it's going to give us the ability to take the videos offline. So with the mobile app, you'll be able to go in and take the Stream videos offline. So imagine you're on a tablet, you can take some videos from Stream offline and then you can watch them when you're on the plane, do training and all that sort of stuff. So that's what the mobile app is really going to give us along with all the other nice features an app does, but it's really aimed at that offline viewing, which I think is a really good idea, and we should see that coming out in the end of this month, October, for iOS and Android as well. So that's going to be a really cool little feature. Another one I've got here is that Azure SMB Files has had a major improvement. That major improvement is its ability now to authenticate with Azure AD. So Azure SMB Files allow you to map a storage location in Azure to a drive letter that you can use on your local PC. Great for moving data, for getting rid of file shares on-prem. And now they have the ability to integrate directly with the access control lists in your Windows environment from your Azure AD using Azure AD domain services. So again, this is really another step towards the option of getting rid of lots and lots of on-prem servers with file shares. If you haven't looked at SMB file shares, that's a thing I would suggest you have a look at as well. So what do you think about that?
Just a question. Well, just a question on that, Robert. So with things moving into SharePoint, things moving into OneDrive for Business, where do you think the place for Azure File Share is playing?
So Azure File Share, again, gives people an environment in which they've already got a file server. Maybe they've got it in multiple locations and they want to synchronize that information between many locations. SharePoint, OneDrive is typically around document management, so adding value around metadata and those sort of things. So it makes sense to put stuff in SharePoint to get the search, to get the metadata, to get the document check-in, check-out, but not all documents make sense putting into SharePoint. So for example, if you have a very large image library or maybe AutoCAD files, for example, that really aren't searchable, that doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense putting them into SharePoint because it chews up a huge amount of space. And sure, you get storage, but you don't get any of the other benefits because the files don't support it. So the SMB file shares, again, is a really simple agent-style environment that you put on your servers. That then synchronizes that information up to a central storage location in Azure where you can access the files as well. And we'll synchronize it down to other file servers. So it's got some really clever technology around tiering. It looks at what files are in use and which use ones aren't in use, only syncs the ones that are current. So again, it's a great solution as an option for files that don't make sense in the Microsoft environment. The other side of the coin is don't forget that there is storage limits when it comes to things like SharePoint, Teams, and so on. So Azure File Sync basically can overcome that as well. So again, I think it's another fantastic tool in the toolbox of people who are looking to go to the cloud.
Yeah, I think that is a challenge for most people, particularly when they start looking at how we're going to configure our SharePoint environment, and they're looking at the limitations and how it works and that sort of thing, and they go, oh, this isn't really right. Now we have 40,000 photos or something. I don't know if SharePoint's really going to add a lot of value around that. Maybe we shouldn't. But basically what you're saying is if that stuff isn't going to, it doesn't need the power of SharePoint, put it into Azure File Share and then use SharePoint for the high value documents, your HR documents, your company policies and procedures.
And you could also look at it as an archiving, automatic backup. You can look at it as a migration strategy. So if you were to do a migration from on-prem to SharePoint, on a normal ADSL consumer-grade broadband connection, you'll be there for months, weeks, years, and probably decades. But again, if you can get them up into Azure SMB file shares, then copying them from Azure SMB to the Microsoft Data Center is lightning fast. So that's another way that you can use it. So again, it's just another tool in the arsenal that you can choose to use in a way which makes sense for the business. What else have you seen at Ignite that gets you excited?
Oh, what gets me excited? Microsoft Search, Robert. Microsoft Search. So when Google come out with their Google Search product, which was in their $10 a month plan, I nearly lost it. I thought, this is the future. Being able to, one of the big challenges of Office 365, I think, is, you might have people with documents in OneDrive, some in SharePoint, some in Teams. There's chats, there's information everywhere. Plus there's information from other organizations, other third-party apps, there's information from the web, documents on your computer. There's all this stuff that's just everywhere. So what Microsoft's really trying to do with Microsoft Search is bring all of this stuff together so you can find stuff. Because I think one of the big challenges is people are all doing their own thing. They're all running around with their heads chopped off, running businesses or doing sales or doing whatever job they do in the business. And before you know it, the place is a bit of a mess. So you can put in some structure and you can put in some governance and you can try and help people along the way. But I think it doesn't really work properly until you've got a way to find all that stuff really simply and easily. And I think that's where Microsoft Search comes in. What's your take on it, Robert?
So one of the challenges with Microsoft is there's a search for SharePoint, there's a search for Teams, there's a search for Outlook. They're all been in different places, all different locations. And again, most people
are... Don't forget Delve.
Delve, yes. Each app had its own unique self, a search, and it was all in a different location on the page. And again, most users are familiar of a single box using the Google product. So the idea with Microsoft Search is bringing all of these together, giving a consistent experience. So when you do a search, it's going to allow you to search across the products. It's all going to be in the same location, probably in the middle of the page, I believe, up the top there. And if you go to and use something like Bing, for example, which will search the internet as well as your internal stuff, if you've obviously set that up and allowed that. So if your users are using Bing, they can also get results from inside the business because you've made that connectivity. So again, it makes sense, and I think there's going to be a lot of benefit. And I think Microsoft has promised the unified search for quite a while, but now it's obviously making a concerted effort to bring this together. We're now seeing this in the new Outlook. We're seeing this in some of Teams as well. So I think this is a good thing, and then bring it together and using it and integrating it with Bing, for example. So when you do internet searches, you'll also be able to see your internal stuff as well. I think it's going to be quite powerful. So it makes a lot of sense whether people will swap from the traditional Google or whatever, but in a Microsoft environment and as more value is driven from internal and outside. So one of the big benefits Bing will give you over something like Google, for example, not only will it search external, but it will also search your internal stuff as well via a single search box. So again, we'll wait and see. And Microsoft, again, the integrated searching hasn't always been the greatest success for Microsoft, but it would seem to me that they are committed to doing this, and there is some examples of how this is beginning to roll out. So we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. We'll see what happens. But at this stage, yes, still very positive on it, but let's see what it actually brings.
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a masterstroke. From everyone laughed at Microsoft back when they launched Bing, because why would you go into a red ocean with sharks everywhere and a very dominant player and really no clear value proposition above what Google was offering? and go and play in that space. And now a few years later, it's as if they saw the vision and they saw the future, that people are going to have all this information that they own and they want to search and control. So if they had to build this from scratch today, if they decided today that they were going to do it, the product would be too far away. So they've been able to build up that internal capability now. So, you know, we don't get a product that's terrible. They've made the mistakes. They've gone through the process. So I'm quite optimistic, and I'm just thinking, you know, my daily business of what I do, you know, I don't know where any of the Windows settings are anymore because I just search for them in Windows 10. I get in Windows 7 and I can't find something, I get frustrated. Not that I'm in there very often. I have four desktops left that will be gone next month, hopefully. But yeah, you know, I just search for the setting you need. You want Bluetooth setting? Just search Bluetooth. There it is. Click. I'm in. Set it up. Printers, set it up, you know. So yeah, so search is transformational. I think it's going to be a very, very important part. And I think it's kudos to Microsoft for making sure that they've got that stuff covered.
Well, it's very interesting. Many people write off Microsoft being as a search engine that woefully competes with Google. But what you've got to realize is that aside from being a search engine, what Bing does, Bing is crawling all the web's content and providing all the signals from that into the Microsoft graph. So it's looking at good and bad websites. So when you run the ATP and you look at safe links, for example, that's thanks to Bing. Bing's crawling those sites to see whether they conform, they're secure or whatever. So again, yes, it is a search engine. Yes, it may be coming in second place, but don't forget, this is also a technology that is feeding its results into things like the Microsoft Security Graph to help give better security for tenants and that. So it does serve more than one purpose here, and that's what we're starting to see with its integration with Office 365. So if you go to Bing now, once you've done the integration steps, you'll be able to see results from Bing, which are obviously out there on the internet, but there'll also be a panel and you'll be able to show results from inside the business that only the business can see, and you'll be able to see things like files, sites, so things that match that criteria. Conversations. So again, when we start having conversations in Teams and we do a search in Bing, that's going to start showing up. So again, hopefully Microsoft will get this right, because I think search is the key technology, the big benefit, I think, of what we're seeing in the modern era. And hopefully Microsoft will have the ability to look internally and externally, and that's really going to give it a big advantage or a differentiation from everybody else out there. So some other interesting news I've got is that Microsoft is updating its certification exams. So the Azure exams, which used to be 75, 30 something, are now changing to AZ-100, AZ-200, AZ-300. So they're breaking those Azure ones up into a number of individual Azure exams. And there's also some new Office 365 ones coming. So the Office 365 ones were 70, 346 and 347. They are going to be replaced in March 2019 with two replacement exams called MS-100 and MS-101. So lots and lots of updates and information from there. Anything else grab your fancy?
Not really, actually. There's been a lot. I suppose there's a bit around the passwordless logins, which are really interesting.
That's super cool too. I set that up. That's basically now what you can do is when you set up multi-factor authentication, the user can opt to use their phone to log them in. So what happens is when they log in with their identity, instead of a password, the screen presents them with a number. That is then on their mobile device, they get a choice of three numbers. They select the number that matches the one on the screen. They verify their identity with a finger or a PIN number unique to the device, and then they log in so they don't need to put a password in. So yeah, super cool.
And this has been a thing with Surface Hubs. So if you've had a Surface Hub, you can have passwordless login using the Microsoft Authenticator app, which is really good. And yeah, for those people who are out there sort of going, oh, what about security? What about security? I'd like to remind you of like the old credit card security, when people used to put their PIN in for $3 purchases and those sorts of things. And, you know, they found out the chip was more secure. Not putting the password in was more secure, because when you need to make a big purchase or a big decision and you put your password in, It shouldn't have the same thing as if you're putting it in all the time for small stuff. So you're reducing your exposure because there's less chance of someone seeing it over your shoulder, or you know, just being blasé about it because you're putting it in all the time. You'd be surprised how these sorts of little tweaks, you know, like I'm looking at Brio cameras and rolling that out across a few customers at the moment for Windows Hello, Windows 10, Windows Hello with the webcam. I don't like the idea that's always looking at me. However, you can hide the camera and just use the laser, the infrared to log you in. So those sorts of things, making the user experience really seamless. They're going to have better passwords. They're going to be more comfortable having a longer password because they're not typing it in all the time. They're faster at their work. They don't have to think all the time about what password. They just sit down, log in, spin up their password manager, and off they go. They're in business.
So the important thing to realize with Windows Hello is that Windows Hello is not passing a password or whatever based on what you look like or your facial features. What Windows Hello does is basically it unlocks the TPM chip, the encryption chip that's on most modern computers, and then that does a handshake to Azure AD, right? So make sure that you have a look at and understand the difference how Windows Hello actually does work. When you look at it, it is very, very secure the way they've gone about it, but it is so easy to do. And for the family members who I've got Surfaces for, it's an absolute knockout. They just look at their machine, logs them in straight away. They don't have to remember the password, but I know it's secure because, like I said, it's unlocking the TPM chip, which is then doing a key exchange, and it's being verified that it is being logged in.
I must say, with Microsoft BitLocker, TPM, all of this sort of stuff that Microsoft leverages, the stuff is secure out of the box pretty much. Like, as long as you turn all this stuff on, the NSA, the police, all these people are having real challenges trying to break into terrorist machines. That's why we're getting legislation.
So let me ask you a question, right? Let me ask you a question. How many machines in the real world, right, the real world outside our little podcast bubble here, have you seen implemented with Windows Hello?
All Surface devices.
Correct.
About 50% of people will use that. Yeah, as far as desktop devices.
But what I'm saying is you don't generally see them enabled. Again, what you generally see is people have a lot of these devices, but they're still logging in a password to get in. So again, part of this is setting this stuff up, enabling it, using it, understanding it, right? So again, the Surface machines have it. A lot of other, you can buy add-on cameras to do this, but it's important to start understanding this and look at this as a solution because it makes the customer's life so much easier, especially if they've already got the equipment. So I see a lot of these machines already out there, but a lot of this really basic stuff is simply not enabled for the user to make life so much easier. So the advice is that we need to make sure we go and enable all the features and make life more secure and also much easier for our customers, I believe.
Yeah, and don't sell it as just security either. You say, okay, well, LastPass is a classic example. They just have an enterprise product and they don't even talk about security. They just say, hey, how would you like to save 50 hours a year? Okay, how do I do that? Oh, well, cut out all this password nonsense, have one password, put some management and some control around that password, and here's why it's more secure if you are interested. But trust me, 50 hours a year is a lot of money to any business. I don't care who you are. So it's an easy sell from their perspective because they're not just telling you be more secure. They're saying, hey, be more productive, and oh, by the way, now you're more secure.
Guess what, Brenton?
But
guess what? We've managed to fill up over 45 minutes on updates from Ignite. We've still got a whole range of them we should go through, but I think we'll need to defer that to another episode. We'll have to encourage people to listen to that as well. I think we need to round off for today. We could go on for hours and hours and hours, but let's break it up into maybe a couple of different episodes. So in summary from me, the big announcements were the Windows Virtual Desktop, the files on the Mac, Microsoft Learn, some of the OneDrive updates we're seeing, bye-bye to Staff Hub, Microsoft Stream gets its own little app, and the Azure SMB files gets a major upgrade. Now, I've got a half a dozen or a dozen more that I can go through, but they're the top ones that really grab me. What about yourself, Brenton? What would you say is the top number of updates that you saw come out?
I think maybe Microsoft Search is the standout for me. I think that's going to be the most important thing moving forward for Microsoft. They've provided all the tools, they've provided integration, they've given you all the power to run your business, but I can already see out in the industry and out in the real world, people are already having trouble trying to locate all this information, this data we're creating. This is where Microsoft Search is really going to come into its own. I'd love to see some stats or success around what Google's product has done in G Suite and how that's being used out there, because I'm not a G Suite partner. I have no idea what they're doing over there. But I imagine it will have a big effect on particularly larger businesses who, you're trying to find a leave form or something, and if you don't fill out the right one, you're in trouble and all of this sort of stuff. And you ask your manager and they don't know where it is, but they know it's on the system somewhere. All of a sudden going to Search Experience and going, find me the HR form. And as that gets smarter, that's what's going to be very, very interesting to me. So fingers crossed that will continue to grow and develop.
Excellent. You know what, Britton?
What's that?
It's time to wind up. How can people get in contact with you and with us?
Yep. So the easiest way to find us is Robert's on Twitter with Director of CIA, and I'm on Twitter as well. So contact Brenton. You can send us feedback at feedback@needtoknow.cloud. And we would always like to hear how we're going on the podcast. We've been getting a lot of really good feedback lately around the content and how it's being delivered. But we're always open to hearing whatever feedback you want to give us. So send us a message, tell us what you think. If we missed any important Ignite updates, let us know so we can get it on in on the next episode. And we'd love to hear from you.
You know what, Brenton?
What's that?
Where are all the links going to be?
All the links will be in the show notes.
Excellent.
I should have wrote this down.
Yeah, exactly. You would think after all these episodes he'd have it off pat, people, but not yet. So we're still training him. He's doing a good job, but we need to make sure that he can do it end to end for the day that Robert decides to finally give this up and retire, or Brenton decides to break off and do his own competing podcast. Now, again, thank you very much for listening. We appreciate your time. As Brenton said, send us feedback, comments, let us know what you'd like to dive into. There's plenty of announcements here. We can go and try and do a deep dive into some of these, talk about these, hopefully try and get some people from Microsoft to speak about these. If you have any other suggestions for us, please let us know via all those contact methods. But you know what, Brenton?
What's that, Robert?
I think it's time to end the podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode. Listening to this episode.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.